Welcome back to the Mackham in the Middle podcast. Once again, something a little bit different with the season now finished. We mentioned at the end of the last podcast that we did, of course, the awards podcast. If you haven't listened to that, go and listen to it now, that we would be doing a podcast early this week talking about some of the most ridiculous slash outrageous, unpopular Sunderland opinions. And I wasn't expecting too many replies, but turns out there's about 200 of them. So we're going to do this in two parts, first of which will be out obviously now as you're listening to it, and the next one hopefully by next week. So we'll get straight into them because some of them are interesting. I'm sure there will be a lot of debate about some of them, and I'll start with the first one for James because I think it's quite a fitting one. One of the replies to that tweet was, "It is time the Sunderland echo ceased."
Well, if that happens, I'll be out of a job, and I quite like covering Sunderland, so I hope that doesn't happen. Listen, this actually gives me a good opportunity because we're just about to release a massive survey for Sunderland fans to participate, and it's got everything in on matchday experience, Tony Mowbray, Christian Speakman, loan players, transfers, and, you know, Red and White Army do a lot of this stuff already, but it's just good for visibility for fans to have their opinions heard. Obviously, we get a bit of content out of it as well, which is the aim of the game for us, but I think it's an important function of the Sunderland Echo that it does relay fans' opinions to the club so that fans can see them, so that club can see them. I think that's a really important function of the Sunderland Echo. But yeah, in terms of criticism, I think, you know, constructive criticism's always welcome, really. I mean, the Echo's 149 years old, I think. It was probably criticised when it was founded. It'll probably be criticised tomorrow, and it'll probably be criticised in another 149 years if it's still here. So bring it on. What I will say is I think the accountant in question, I just had a little look on Twitter there, he's faceless, nameless, under an alias, without any real sort of things to improve on. So if he wants to drop us an email with you know, points to correct or anything like that, he's more than welcome. I'm sure I can pass that on to my editor and avoid that one like the plague. But any constructive criticism is always welcome. But you do have to take these things with a pinch of salt when they come from faceless, nameless accounts. But onwards and upwards and to the some of the horrendous Sunderland opinions we're about to dissect.
We are. And I think horrendous is probably the biggest understatement anyone's ever said on this podcast, because some of these are genuinely mind-blowing. No particular order I'm going to do them in, but you can have the next one, Michael.
Oh, and this is good
fun. I'm not going to say who they're from, because I think everyone knows who they're from when you posted the tweet with this awful opinion. But Ellis Sims wasn't as big as a miss as everyone acted. Gelhart was better for the team overall. His work rate wasn't great, and he only ever scored goals from inside the box. Stewart's long-term injury is a bigger problem than everyone makes out. Two major injuries in a season.
Well, there's a fair few of them. Don't just chuck one of them in. Well, first of all, I wonder why you give me the Ellis Sims one. obviously, if anyone's listening, basically I'm a big defender of Ellis Sims, and I remain a big defender of Ellis Sims because I feel like I'm the only one who rates him. I think he's someone who, yes, okay, I think his touch sometimes is a bit off. I think he generally uses his body fairly well. I think he gets in good positions. He obviously scores goals. What was the point about Gelhart, that he's got a bigger work rate for the team and Sims only scores goals inside the box?
Gelhart was better for the team overall, and that Sims' work rate wasn't great and only scored inside the box.
If I'm going to give that opinion a bit of...
I mean, just to throw that in there, it's technically not just an opinion, but it's factually incorrect.
No,
his first goal was actually from outside the box, I think, wasn't it, against Bristol City?
Yeah, that is also very true. I think, to be fair, if I'm going to give that opinion a bit of leeway, we scored more goals in the last few months than we probably did, obviously, in the previous times of the season when we had Sims fit, or at least matched the amount of goals we scored. So that's actually not too unfounded. I still like Ellis Sims. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Sims and Gelhart. If we had a chance to get both of them back, I probably would. But the only way that either one's going to happen is if Leeds or Everton stay up, I think. So yeah. As for the Ross Stewart one... I get that he's a big miss because of the focal point and the fact that sometimes we've had no one to aim for when we hoof the ball, but I would still disagree with that because I think if you actually looked at how well we've actually coped in the last, what is it, 3-4 months, if that was as big an issue as what people may think it is, we wouldn't have got into the playoffs in the first place.
I mean, just to stop you there, because I don't know if I said this right, but the point, I mean, I've read it wrong as well, but the point he's making is that his injury record is a bigger problem than everyone makes out, because he's had the two injuries in the season.
I was going to say that, and that's the only bit of that statement that I actually agree with. I think.
Okay, fair enough.
I actually think in the summer, Sunderland should plan as if they already don't have Ross Stewart, because they are two serious injuries. And yeah. I think they should try and get two or three strikers, and then if Ross Stewart's fit, it's a bonus almost, just because they are two pretty bad ones.
Yeah.
Okay, well, apologies that I can then, because I misheard and obviously misread it then.
I mean, I've misunderstood it, to be fair, the first time I read it. It's just when I've looked back
there. Well, okay, that's reassuring at least. But yeah, no, I think I can get behind that. I mean, he had a lot of injuries before he came to Sunderland, didn't he? And then obviously he's had two massive ones in the season. And by the way, just to point it out from Ross Stewart, he's got to be careful what his next move is, because the fact that he's had these two big injuries means that clubs are going to be put off signing, A, potentially signing him, but B, definitely giving him the money that he probably was asked for. So, yeah, I think what James suggested is probably a good thing. And put it this way, I'm less worried now if we sold Ross Stewart than I would have been 4 months ago.
Yeah, that was a fair way of putting it. Dylan, you've got the next one. Luke O'Neill's versatility is his weakness, and he should only be a push comes to shove player next season.
I feel like it would be easy to just like laugh off every single statement on this list.
So I was going to say, I'll
try and play devil's advocate to an extent. I mean, obviously he's played everywhere. I don't think it's a position he hasn't played. To be fair, obviously he's filled in fullback, centre back, midfield, and to a degree, I sort of understand it, because every time there's a gap. Or there's an important player out in any of those positions, the first thoughts, oh, well, O'Neill can play there. So that's that. But and I suppose it's then easy for him to struggle to nail down a certain position, although he has done that, obviously, at centre-back this year, while still playing in either full-back side. And, I mean, I know he divides opinion a lot. Everyone either thinks he's the best player in the world, or he's absolutely awful. There's nobody who just seems to think he's all right.
Definitely the first one.
And I think I don't think it's a weakness to have a player who can play X amount of positions. I mean, I think it's a similar sort of benefit we'll have with Gucci. He can play on both sides, full back, further forward.
Even as
a number 10 as well, which obviously we all remember Dan fighting for. So it could never be a bad thing in terms of for this team as a whole. But for 4-9, I suppose it's a... It means that he would sometimes struggle to nail down a certain position. But as we've said, mostly through the fact that we've got loads of injuries, he has still managed to do that this year. But I mean, no matter what he does, I don't think anyone's ever going to be 100% happy with him, because he's whenever he messes up, it's always, oh, he smiles and that's why he's in the team. So I'm never too sure. I think to a degree, I agree with it, yeah.
Yeah, I will always be one of them people that are always happy with him, no matter what. James, next one is that Robertson Ahmad's constant link-up player caused us more harm than good at times. Our player became one-dimensional in some games and isolated Clark and Gelhardt, although it did look against dinner.
Am I allowed to swear?
Absolutely.
Fucking hell, like... I mean... I don't know where to start. When the Roberts Ahmad partnership was first introduced onto a Sunderland pitch, I did think it caused a few problems because Clark was isolated. However, he can't have been that isolated, because he ended up with 23 goal contributions in all competitions at the end of the season. Gelhardt, I think, was a good player, but not an out-and-out number 9 and goal scorer, asked to fill the shoes of Ross Stewart, and I think that was his problem. Even though I like Gelhardt, and I think he did a lot of running, he did a lot of things right. His work rate was phenomenal. He was just the wrong player at the wrong time. Even though I think in a different Sunderland side with different players around him, playing off a striker in a different system, I think he would have been good. I don't think Sunderland get the playoffs without that sort of Ahmad Roberts partnership / duo. I think when it worked, it was absolutely electric. Yes, there were some games when it was off and the passes would miss the mark, but I don't think it hindered Sunderland. In fact, I think it probably propelled Sunderland to the playoffs. With the injury to Ross Stewart as well, if he'd approached that attack in a different way, I don't think Sunderland would have got anywhere near, to be honest. I think that was the driving force. And I think you can almost talk about them as a three, you know, behind Gelhardt with Clark, because although Roberts didn't play as close to Clark, and nor did Ahmad, Clark still contributed. So that that three in behind Gelhard was still functioning really, really, really well. I don't have the figures to hand, but if you totted up the goals and assists of the three of them over the competitions combined, I think it would make for pretty good reading, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's not just the goals and assists either. There was so many goals scored this season where Robert would get the ball, it would be an Ahmad back to Robert, and then maybe through to Pritchard, who'd get the assist for someone else to score, and a lot of it came from them too.
I don't think you could argue that it hindered Sunderland's season. It was frustrating to watch when it didn't work, because we'd all seen how well it could work, and I think maybe you saw that against Luton Town in the playoff semi-final, second leg, and that's perhaps colouring this gentleman's opinion slightly. But without those two playing as well as they did, I don't think Sunderland get anywhere near the top six, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, I think that is very accurate. Michael, next one. We are too attached to certain players purely based on the fact they used to be shit and now they're not as shit and they need to go. And they haven't said who them players are, but I think there's a couple you could probably put in there and think, yeah, he's probably talking about them. But thoughts on that one?
I'd like him to come out and actually specify which players that he's actually going on about. I think, again, I'm someone who, and I stand by this, I think people judge players, well, since James has already swore, fuck it, I'm going to. you know, like, people just judge players as shit way too quickly and say, oh, you're not world class for 2-3 games, therefore you're shite. But obviously that's not the opinion, is it? I'd imagine Luke O'Nien is, I'd be very surprised if Luke O'Nien is not one of the people that they're thinking about. I don't know. You also got to remember, some of the players that we could be referring to here might just be better suited to the Championship than League One, because League One has a completely different set of requirements that the Championship does, because League One's mainly about physicality.
I think the way they've put it as well is probably the negative way of putting it, by saying someone used to be shit and they're not shit. Whereas if you want to put a spin on it, they've just improved as a player.
Well, exactly. It could be that way, couldn't it? If they're referring to players that start, I'd be interested to see Pierre Ekwa's among this. And if there's one on Pierre Ekwa, I think you better give it to James, because he's obviously the head of the fan club for Ekwa. But
I'm glad we've established this now.
Yes, we have. And don't get me wrong, I'll be vice president or whatever you want, because I'm a big fan of him as well. But point is, you know, Ekwa, as an example, just for instance, I know he's only been here a few months, but he didn't set the world alight initially. Does that mean he was shit and therefore people think he's less shit because he's done better? You know, it's like you said, they could have simply just improved as a player. For me to get to me to properly look at that opinion, I need to know which players they're referring to personally.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Dylan, next one. This one's quite similar to the other one, so I'm going to skip that one. So I'll go to the next one. Danny Bart, only attribute is headers and is the worst captain. I mean, he's not even our captain, is he? But Gooch is a great leader.
Yeah, I mean, well, the first part of it is I'm saying Gooch is a great leader. I agree, because obviously he's been in and around the squad for many years, but he's been in our academy since he was pretty much frog spawned. Do you know what I mean? He's part of the furniture now. And I think it's always important to have players in your team who know what it means to play for the club, who like know the area and have an actual desire and a love for the club. And they're not just sort of there because they're getting paid to be there. I'm not saying any of our players are like that, because we sort of have a good, we do have the good characters now. But I mean, in years gone by, we've just had, you know, they're going to come for the 50 grand a week, and they're not asked about playing for Sunderland. They're just doing it for a wage. And I think in order to prevent from going back to that sort of atmosphere in terms of in and around the team, it's important to have your characters like Gooch there. So I agree on that point. But regarding Danny Bart, that is pure waffle. That, like, I mean, I don't see how someone can look at, when we've got an average squad age of what is it, about 22, having like an experienced centre back in his 30s who's played as high as Premier League football before, and being good at headers, yes, obviously that's a good attribute for a defender to have. So naturally you're going to notice it. But I mean, his defensive intelligence and his experience just make him crucial to the side, and he's sort of there to marshal the younger lads and keep them in check.
I think it's because people watch too much top tier football when you watch the likes of Van Dijk and God knows who else, and expect every defender to be, you know, able to run at 100 miles an hour, pick out a 75-yard pass, be able to shoot from 40 yards and find the top corner. And
can I come in with some stats here, courtesy of our friend SAFC Data Analytics?
Absolutely.
So Danny Bath's accurate forward passes percent is 64%, which is well above average in the Championship. and also his successful dribbles is 85%, which is like seriously well above like average championship sample defenders. Receive passes 60%, passes per 90, 59%, all above the championship average. So to say he only heads the ball, I think is a bit disingenuous, to be honest.
It is. It is. Next one. Quite fitting for James, this one, because I know he likes the topic of writing players off before they've had a chance to show what they can do. Lahadji has looked woeful, but because he's French, we have to pretend he's better than Dayaku.
Oh, man. How many minutes has Lahadji played? Probably about 12 or something. Serious
about
question.
That, yeah.
Like, I think didn't he come on against Reading or something? And I don't think he's even featured since then.
Has he started? Did he start a cup game, or am I imagining that?
That's a good question.
I don't think he has, but I might be wrong.
So, it's minimal. His playing time has been completely minimal.
He hasn't started any in the league.
Hasn't started.
And he couldn't play in the cup game because he signed him after the first leg at Fulham, I think, and obviously wasn't eligible for send. So he's played 5% of minutes this season.
So basically, six he games hasn't started played. A single game for us yet then.
Yeah, and he's got six championship appearances off the bench. Yeah. Obviously, he's 21, so he's, you know, you would expect him possibly to be featuring a bit more. You have to caveat that, however, by the fact that he's never lived outside of France in his life, so he's adapting to a new culture, a new language. You know, France, spoilers, is different to England in a lot of ways, especially the northeast of England, I would suggest. So he's still settling in, still settling down. Give the lad a chance. You know, similar sort of situation with Bennett, although Bennett's a bit younger. I'm a firm believer that you can't judge players until they've started 10, 15...
Started a game, at least.
Started 10, 15 games in a row. And then perhaps you can... And even then, sometimes it's even a bit longer. You're looking at like 20, 25, 30 before you can really judge a player and you really know them. I've seen people sort of desperate to label a Sunderland player is a flop, either Lahadji or Bennett, and I just don't see that. We're clearly a development signing, and if you frame it in the context as well, Lahadji was never signed in January to come in and change our season or massively affect it. He was signed with the future in mind. Hopefully he comes good. He might not, you know, that is a possibility that you have to acknowledge, but I just don't think we've seen enough of him. He hasn't had enough of a chance yet. There'll be reasons behind that, but yeah, give these lads a chance. It was the same with Ekwar when, you know, we were playing Burnley at Turf Moor after 60 minutes. He was getting absolute pelters. Some of it was constructive criticism, don't get me wrong. Some criticism was a little bit justified, but I thought the quickness in which certain elements of our fan base wanted to write him off, they were desperate to write him off, I thought that was pretty poor. I thought it was a poor look, to be honest. And he's
just to quickly jump in as well. You've got to bear in mind, what position is Lahadji? He's a winger, isn't he? Was he really going to get into the team ahead of Clark, Ahmad or Roberts?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I mean, I'll throw this one in as well to you, James, because it's related. We should have developed Lahadji and give him game time instead of playing Gelhardt.
I mean, there is an argument there, but I don't really think they play in the same position. Lahadji, as I understand, it's more of a winger, although it is difficult, really, to get a read on him. I haven't played so few games. But can you imagine the fume if that had been done? I think that's a very hard one to sell. I would suggest the reason he hasn't featured as much is because he's just not ready yet. The coaching staff will be looking at him. And just because you're not playing doesn't mean you're not developing. You know, the coaching staff will want to get stuck into him. Mowbray will want to get stuck into him. Mowbray's talked about standards and players, you know, getting used to what is expected in the EFL and the Championship at Sunderland. Ahmad's had to learn that, and he's done that quite well. So there's so many factors, but I don't think just because he's not playing or hasn't played a lot doesn't mean he's not developing, and there will be reasons behind it. The one thing we know about this football club at the moment, actually, is that in terms of developing young players and getting certain aspects of their career and time frames, they get that right. Do you know what I mean? In terms of when to put that development up a notch. We've seen it with Patterson, Neil, various other players as well. So I would trust them. I would trust them with them, to be honest.
Yeah. Next one for you, Michael, is Dan Neil is useless. And if he wasn't a local lad, he'd be playing in League One at best.
Christ on a bike.
I think Dylan's just said it for me.
That was me.
Let me respond to that with this. Daniel's been linked with Premier League moves. There must be a reason for that. Yeah. I just can't. Again, right, Daniel at times has cost us. I think there's been, no, you're wrong. I get frustrated as anyone when he tries to do that little Cruyff turn or spin in his own half when someone's pressing him, because I think at Coventry, first game of the season, but bear in mind that's his first game in the Championship, you know, that it could cost us. There are times I think Daniel needs to have better decision making, but again, how old's he? 21. So I'm sorry again.
I mean, if he is 21 or 22, whatever he is, I think he's got, well, I think he hit 100 appearances for Sunderland this season, didn't he? If I'm not mistaken.
If not this season, then definitely
he's got 105 appearances in all competitions for Sunderland.
Yeah, and like I say, at that age, if you're hitting them appearances, you know, granted some of them are in League One, a lot of them were in the Championship this season, probably too many, realistically, and I think we spoke about that on the podcast before. If you're useless at 21, you're not going to accumulate that many first-team appearances for a team challenging for the playoffs, are you?
Exactly, and again, he's not going to be linked with Premier League moves. Now, granted, he was linked when we were in League One, but that's probably even more of a case for him. Like, you know, yeah, he was linked to when we were in League One to, what was it, Aston Villa and Burnley, who were in the Prem at the time? So I think, if you think that he's used to that, I think, was it him who gave Ahmad the assist for his second goal at Birmingham? I'm pretty sure it was.
He also played
a nice role in Sunderland's goal of the season at Reading against, at Reading at the Majersey Stadium.
What should have been the EFL goal of the season?
Well, Sunderland's goal of the season, you know, but, you know.
Oh, I know it is, but yeah, it should have been EFL's, and the fact is not as a joke. But anyway, that's just a personal vendetta. But yeah, you're right. Like, Daniel, this person can tell their opinion, but Daniel's anything but useless.
I think the problem, just to interject very quickly, is, like, everybody has to be really good or really bad. There's no in-between. It's perfectly acceptable to criticise Daniel's performances at times and recognise aspects of his game that could be improved, because they are clearly aspects of his game that can be improved, no doubt about it. He's also got a lot of really, really impressive qualities. But to call him useless, I just don't get. And actually, I would suggest that him being from the North East and being an academy lad means he's actually criticised more heavily at times. I think it's the opposite of what this user's suggesting.
I don't get about this. That's another thing I don't get. Why do people who from our academy get scrutinised more heavily? Aren't they the people you should be wanting to back more and more?
It's always baffled me, but I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I'll never understand that.
There seems to be a cycle with that when they break through. I think we've seen it with Gooch and the likes of Watmore over the years. When they break through, they're the new exciting, shiny thing that everybody loves to get behind. But then after a while, I don't know if it's face familiarity or people want them to be better than they are, or they stick out more because they know that from the academy, but there seems to always be like a dip in people's opinions of these academy players, and then it seems to come back around. I don't know what it is, but that's not just unique to Sunderland, though.
Oh no, I know it won't be. I mean, to be fair, the thing that as a supporters, as football fans, that people really need to get out their head is expecting people to be the finished article straight away, because that's not going to help anybody, in my opinion.
Yeah. Next one, Metete should have been given more of a chance instead of being loaned out, Dylan.
Right, this one really winds us up, because it's almost as if the reason we loaned him out was to get better as a footballer so that he could come back and be ready to break into the side. Like, I think what people are forgetting is that he had half a season to break into the side this year, and then obviously in January he's been loaned out, and I just find it funny that nobody was really fighting his corner until he was already loaned out. So it's almost as if loaning him out, he's improved and it's done exactly the purpose of that loan move. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I think as well, when you look at, there was quite a few people at times saying, you know, look how good Metete is doing, we should never have loaned him out. But that is the whole point of a loan. If you've loaned him out and he's doing well, that's a good loan. That's exactly what they're there for.
I think the thing is with Metete as well, is it's like the Evans injury thing happened just after he left. So Sunderland's options in midfield have been slightly limited. So there is an argument to suggest that we could have kept him and he could have played a little bit off the bench here and there and provided a different option. However, in terms of his development and coming back into the team next season, I don't think that would have helped him as much as this loan has. So I think the best thing for Metete and Sunderland in the long term, actually, was for him to go out on loan.
Yeah. Anything else to add on that?
Yeah, well, obviously, so he's gone out of Plymouth. He's got regular minutes in a side that play, obviously, play good football in a league that he was familiar with because he had that half season there playing regular minutes for Fleetwood, who aren't as good of a side. No disrespect to them. And then so he's now going to be in a better position to try and get a spot in our sort of regular side next season. But also with him being gone for this past few months, we'll then also have the opportunity to bring Ekwa in. And after, albeit a shaky start, he's now come good. So we're going into the summer and into the new season with two solid options in midfield, as opposed to what might have been had we kept Metetti and given him a chance. I just think loading that one player, developing him, bringing in another, he's now come good. I mean, I don't see how that's not a win-win and how we would have been better off keeping Metetti and then maybe either not bringing in Ekwa at all or bringing him in and him not getting the chance that he's had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a point. Next one for you, James, two of them that are pretty much the same thing. So Ross Stewart's injuries made the team better and we ended up a better team without Stewart. With him, don't think we'd have played so entertainingly. And I mean, I think to an extent, the entertainment factor, possibly, you'd agree with. But in terms of the actual effectiveness of the team and getting results, I think it's hard not to disagree with that one slightly.
Yeah, it is. I think in terms of entertainment, it has been nice to watch, but it's not like Ross Stewart is a 6'4", like, per striker you just lump the ball up to. Like, he can play football as well. So I would have been interested to see how this line of Clark, Ahmad and Roberts, how they would have interacted with Stewart. I actually think it would have made it more dangerous, possibly could have played some better football, especially when you've got the ball up to somebody where it can stick, but who can actually use his feet as well. Just thinking of some of the balls Ahmad would put in, and Clark and Roberts, to be fair, if you had Stewart on the end of them, that would have been nice. And attractive football and entertaining football is quite often winning football as well. And I think would having a fully fit Ross Stewart have increased Sunderland's chances of winning more football games? Yes, absolutely. So I think you have to balance it on that. Sunderland had to find different ways to win, and that resulted in a more sort of ticky-tacker style, which was nice to watch. But I think that could have still developed without Stewart, to be honest. I could see a scenario in which, if he was fit, Tony Mowbray was starting him instead of Gelhart, and then you still had the three behind him. I think that would have worked quite well, especially with Ross Stewart sort of defensive nous from corners as well.
Mm.
I don't think that would have hindered Sunderland, and I still think you could have played, you know, that three in behind. It's testament to Sunderland that they've played such good football without him, really, but I do think he would have improved the side, you know, aesthetically and just from a logistics tactical standpoint as well. I'm thinking the game I always go back to was when Sunderland were 2-0 up against Burnley, but then Burnley battered Sunderland in the second half, scored 4 unanswered goals at the Stadium of Light. If Sunderland had had Ross Stewart up there, there would have been somebody to hit, somebody to hold the ball. Yes, that doesn't mean that you defend better, but it does give you respite and it does get you further up the pitch. So I think all of that comes into it as well.
Yeah. Very quickly, we'll go through one more each as quickly as we can. Back to you, Michael. This one mentions Dan Neil as well, but I'll leave Dan Neil out of it because we've already talked about him. But Patterson's involved as well. Dan Neil and Patterson both need to go. Patterson is as timid a keeper as I've ever seen, no command of the area, no presence, and always feel he's one back pass away from something disastrous. And I saw a few people talk about Patterson saying he's not good enough, he's not this, he's not that, he needs to go if a bid comes in from Selham. But the other point that I made to people was he's 23, I think it is. It's his first full season in, you know, professional football. If he was everything you want in a goalkeeper, he wouldn't be here at 23.
He wouldn't be in a championship. Simple as that. He'd be in the Premier League, he'd be in a top European league abroad, whatever it is. And at the end of the day, for me, plain and simply, Anthony Patterson has already saved us. I think has saved us more, much more than he's ever cost us.
I can't, like, generally can't think of anywhere where he's made a few mistakes here and there, and, you know, a couple of times he came for a cross or not come for a cross when he perhaps should have. But in terms of him directly costing us a goal and in turn directly costing us a result,
There's only one I could maybe think of, and that was Luton at home in the 1-1. But even then, the ball's coming very quickly through a crowd of bodies, and it's, I think he was a bit unsighted.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult to see. I'm not a goalkeeper, so anyone in here is a goalkeeper, please tell me. But I would imagine that that would have been very difficult for him to see that, and he would have been disappointed with that. But otherwise, like, come on. You know, if we really think that Patterson needs to go, then remember that last. Remember who we had the last time in the championship. That should end the debate for me.
Yeah.
Bang on. Bang on.
Back to you, Dylan. Another loan topic. Shouldn't have loaned out Carl Winchester. He didn't play much for Shrewsbury, but was versatile and technically quite good, so could have filled gaps left by injuries, and always seems like he was a popular character among the squad.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think the general consensus is that Winchester is a good character to have in and around the team, but I mean, regarding him not, like, shouldn't have been loaned out, I think it's easy to say that now because hindsight's a wonderful thing, but at the start of the season, with everybody fit, we didn't know like Sir Evans were going to get injured. Was he really going to play games? Probably not. It's the same. I know he filled in it right back every so often, but again, we didn't have any.
Even at the start of the season, you had three right backs as well, though, didn't we?
Yeah. No. Exactly. So I mean, there was no at the time he was loaned out. There was no sort of room for him. And I mean, no, I really do like Carl Winchester, but the fact that no one's saying, oh, what a season Carl Winchester's had at Shrewsbury, I mean, that's in the division below. So why that would make anybody think that he would have been particularly good for us in the championship, that just sounds a bit backwards to me. I think that's just, it's an easy statement to make with the knowledge that we had, that we were short in so many areas through injuries. But I mean, if you look at it objectively, at the time the decision was made, that was the right thing for us. And it's also the right thing for him because obviously that his contract's coming to an end. So why would he have wanted to sort of just sit and be there just in case injuries happened? It wouldn't have been right for him as a footballer to just sit there and have to wait to get his chance, which had we not had that Evans injury, for example, or any of the fullback injuries, he might have never got. So, I mean, you can't really, you can only see it because of how the season turned out. But at the time of the decision, then it was right for us and it was right for him.
I really like Carl Winchester, but even through all of the injuries we've had all over the pitch, at no point were Sunderland fans going, oh, it's a shame we loaned Winchester out, because he's a great professional, a great lad. You know, those Winnie Esther Cruyff turns he was doing and back heels and stuff in League One were great, and he provided us with some good moments. But I don't think he could play in the championship for us, given what the team was trying to achieve and the style of football. That's not to say he couldn't play in the championship. He might be able to, but at no point did I think, God, it's a shame we loaned Winchester out, because he would have been getting serious game time here. I don't think he would have. And if he wasn't the club and he was getting game time, it probably would have been at the expense of someone like an Ekwa or, I don't know, like a Hume or somebody coming back from injury, or a Huggins coming back from injury. It's like, who do you want to give those minutes to? I guess it's the same with having Metete, the same argument we're having Metete at the club for this period as well. It's like all of the players in question need to play minutes, so inevitably some have to get loaned out.
Yeah. And last but not least, for you, James, very straightforward one and probably very questionable one. The club didn't want to go up this season.
Absolute rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. I think it's true that the club are ahead of where they thought they were going to be. I think you can definitely say that. And you could argue that they didn't show enough ambition in January. But there are a lot of arguments to be had around January. You can also say it will be interesting to see what they do this summer. But I think this football club wants to be the very best it can be. These sort of conspiracy theories are a bit damaging. Do you not think that Stuart Harvey and Christian Speakman, as professionals who are paid in careers in sport, would not like a double promotion on their CV from League One to the Premier League in consecutive seasons, and that they wouldn't have been, they would have been quite pleased with that? You know, Kieran Louis-Dreyfus hasn't spent money on this club for it to languish in the Championship. Again, you can argue that maybe they should have shown more ambition in January, but you could flip that on its head and say perhaps the right targets weren't available for the right price and they weren't prepared to do business at the level that the clubs want them to do business at, and they weren't going to have their eyes taken out and whatnot. You could also flip that on its head again and we could be here all day, but it's another argument I find disingenuous that the club didn't want to go up. I think that
there's no club in the world that don't want to get promoted.
Yeah, they're not going to turn down a promotion. And Tony Mowbray would have been his crowning achievement. Really, it would have been a massive achievement for him. So I don't get it. As I say, the whole ambition in January, I think you can have a debate about that, no problem. But the conspiracy theory regarding that, you know, Christian Speakman has gone, Kyrie Louis-Dreyfus has gone to Speakman and said, don't get promoted. And then Speakman's then gone to Tony Mowbray and says, don't get promoted, I think is absolute rubbish. You know, it's good for the club commercially. It's good for the club to have eyes on it when it gets to the playoffs. It would have been good for the club to get to Wembley again. Had that have happened, it would have been a massive occasion. So I don't think that sort of thing happens at football clubs. I think football clubs are always striving to be the best that they can. Yes, they have plans and stuff like that, but I don't think in the modern day that you know, directors of football go, please, Tony, don't get us promoted into the multi-million pound, you know, mega football league that is watched the world over. Please don't do that. I don't think that happens.
Yeah, I doubt it. But that is all of them for today, at least. There's still about 180 to go. We'll get more of them covered at some point in the next week or so to go through them ones as well. And I'm sure there's probably even worse ones in there. In fact, I know there is even worse ones in there, so keep an eye out for that one as well. But that is that for that one today. So like I said, we'll be back to talk about the other ones at a later date, but until then, we will see you later. That's all, folks.